Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to listen to, download, listen to, enjoy, hopefully enjoy, see how it goes. So, a little bit of news, actually not a lot of news. I've just been travelling. When was the last update that I did? A few days ago, but I'm on a cruise ship now, and I'm stuck at sea, probably won't be uploading this episode for a while. It's November, I'm working on my National Novel Writing Month novel. Got to do 50,000 words by the end of the month. I probably won't do that because the story I'm writing is probably only going to be about 35,000 words long. But yesterday I had a storming day, wrote, let me just check here, 9,784 words in one day in about six different writing sessions. Got a lot of chapters done there. So I didn't write anything for the first week in November, and I've almost caught up again in just 4 days of writing up to where I needed to be after not writing for a week. And if I write almost 10,000 words a day, that'll do that. So I'm actually really enjoying this novel. It's called Get That Rat Off My Face, or... exclamation mark. That's the working title at the moment. Anyway, and it's a bit strange, actually, because I was just explaining, as I was writing, I was thinking, oh, I'm writing a Philip K. Dick kind of novel here. It's all about, you know, brain and identity and weird stuff that happens in, you know, Philip K. Dick kind of novels. And so I sort of noticed that as I was doing this long writing stretch yesterday, doing all this writing. And then today I was just chatting at dinner to a guy about it. And he said, oh, this sounds very much like a Philip K. Dick novel. And I'm like, yep, exactly. And so I think it's going to be more like Philip K. Dick novels than my previous ones. But we'll see how that one goes. Anyway, I don't know when this episode is going to be uploaded. Probably in a week's time or something, the next time I get proper internet connection when I'm not on a ship anymore. And if you're wondering what's going on, if you're interested in my travels, check out my blog at the moment. I wrote up a little explanation of what it's like to be someone who travels professionally and has to move around a lot. Sometimes it's good to move around, other times it's not so good. So this is sort of like a win-lose situation kind of thing. So read my blog, lukeburge.com/blog and check out some entries there. If you just click on the travel link and stuff, you can see the different things that I do traveling wise, which is quite interesting. So let's just get straight on to the review that I'm going to be doing today. It's by the book is Cory Doctorow. Let me bring up some notes here. In fact, I've got the Goodreads.com page here, so let me check this out. Yeah, Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom by Cory Doctorow, released back in 2003, and it's 208 pages. I read it as an ebook, and it's a very short ebook. It works out around about 50,000 words, which is almost like a National Novel Writing Month novel. Maybe he wrote it for that because it seems to be, you know, suspiciously exactly 50,000 words long. I've read Cory Doctorow's fiction before. I think I've done two reviews of his. One was called Makers, which I really didn't enjoy very much, and if you've listened to that review, I might be repeating myself a little bit in this review because there are some themes in common with with his novel Makers. Another book that I read was Little Brother. And Little Brother, the title is right there, not referencing the title of a George Orwell book, but one of the characters, of course, is Big Brother in 1984, and this is Little Brother. And the books were about similar kind of things, taking in different directions, in a different kind of attitude and different things like that. But, you know, there were references in it. I think the character in Little Brother, one of his online handles was Winston. The character in 1984. So this is Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, which I guess is referencing the title. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's referencing the title Down and Out in Paris and London by George Orwell. But I have not read that book because, well, I just never read it. So there's many books I've not read. That's one of the almost infinite number of books that I've not read. So if there are references to Down and Out in Paris and London in this novel, that would be great, but I missed them all. So I read this book. I had a long flight. I was flying from Europe to Hawaii, and I managed to finish this book off in just a few hours. Like I say, it's only 50,000 words long. I think you can get it as an audio book, as a paper book, as lots of different ebooks and stuff like that, directly from Cory Doctorow's website. It's all Creative Commons. That's the kind of thing that he does. I think this is actually the first novel that was released under a Creative Commons license, or the first one that I know about, and that's why it's so popular, or that's why it's so well known. It's not certainly not because of the quality of the book, because it's all right, but there's a lot of stuff which I found very disappointing. So let's get straight into it. Like I say, if you've listened to my review of Makers, maybe I'll be repeating myself, but what we have here, it's a few hundred years in the future, and society has changed quite a lot. It's a post-scarcity society, so nobody has to worry about where energy comes from, nobody has to worry about where food comes from, nobody has to really worry about very much at all. There is immortality, which is done from backup, so you can grow yourself a new body and transfer your memories. You've got this electronic wiring in your brain, which can back up your sort of electronic memory, and then also back up organic memory, your brain patterns, your brain matter kind of memory can get backed up as well. So if you die, you can get yourself replaced as good, no problem at all. And so everyone has a very long life too. Now, the whole immortality from backups, it reminded me a bit of the Altered Carbon kind of thing, but that was really a book about sort of like the exploration of two people living, one person living twice, or are you the same person in a new body, and how does your new body affect your personality? That's what Richard Morgan goes into in those bodies. But in this, it's just left as, oh, well, it doesn't matter. The people who didn't want to be immortal, the people who didn't think that they would be immortal if they transferred their mind from one body to another and they relied too much on the soul, well, all those people died out. So all of those questions, we don't need to worry about them, because all the people who worried about those questions, if it was so important about them, well, those people just aren't around anymore. They've died. They died out. The people who didn't want to be immortal, well, they died, which I actually think is quite fun. So it just goes, okay, we're not going to worry about that. What we're going to worry about is the society that results in this post-scarcity immortal being. You can back yourself up or put yourself, you can deadhead for a while. You can go, well, I don't want to be in society for a while, but I don't want to die. So I'll put myself in storage, just my memories. And then in 100 years time, I'll come around again and see how the world has changed. So the transformation that takes place, they call it the Bitchum Society. And the Bitchum Society is where anyone can really do whatever they want. If you have prestige, or what they call woofy, which I'll get onto in a minute, you can sort of have power with different people. And if you do cool stuff, you can take part in what's known as adhocracies. And adhocracies are just groups of people who come together and work on a project. And if the project is cool, yeah, that's good. And if it isn't, well, doesn't matter and stuff like that. So even if you really are the most down and out person in this society, it's a pretty good life. Not really anything bad at all there. You know, you get fed, you get somewhere to sleep, you know, people don't treat you bad at all. Because if they do treat you bad, they lose their woofy. Let me talk a little bit about woofy. This is just a concept where everyone has like a rating. And I guess it's based on, these sort of karma ratings or these other kind of thumbs up, thumb downs, like kind of ratings that you have in like on YouTube and other websites as well. When you're certainly lots of websites where there's forums or there's lots of posts on a blog, maybe something like a blog like Boing Boing. If you do lots of posts and people like what you say, they give you a little thumbs up. And if they don't like it, what you say, you get a little thumbs down. And overall, you get this karma kind of rating. And in this book, they call it woofy. And because everyone is wired up, everyone's brain is wired up, when two people meet, they just check each other's woofy, and then they know kind of who is the more, not so much powerful person, but who deserves the most respect in that relationship. And so if you got one thing to give to one person and you're not quite sure who to give it to, well, you can give it to the person with most woofy. And because they deserve it most, because they've been cool. If people like you, if people like what you do and like what you say, you get more woofy and all of that. So if you give them something, the other person can go, like the person with high woofy can give you a bit of woofy, and then you get a bit higher. Your woofy is a bit higher. And the person who didn't give your unique item to, and it's a post-scarcity, so it's not anything that's important, it's the single things which can't be replicated, and so what is value? And that's what this novel is about, really. It is, what if everything, you know, if you're immortal and energy is free, it's never explained where the energy comes from, so everyone can do free energy. It never explains where all the food comes from. In that way, it's quite soft science fiction in a way, but it's really about what is value when you are in this kind of society. And the way that people find value, or the way that our what's his name? Let me look. I wrote down the name here. Julian. Jules, Julian is his name. So Julian is a main character. And the way that he finds value, or the thing that he finds valuable, which he wants to use his Woofy to protect and to share, protect and share at the same time, is Disney World, Disneyland, the Magic Kingdom. Is it Disney World? Yeah, I think it's Disney World in Florida. So he goes down to Florida and he is there. And what he finds valuable is the tradition of the Magic Kingdom, and I think it's Liberty Square, and all of this book is about this area, this little tiny little part of this new world, the Hall of Presidents and the Haunted Mansion, and that's it. So he goes down to Disney World. It's always been his dream to live in Disney World, and he sets himself up with a girlfriend there, and his girlfriend is what 15% of my age. He's like 120, and she's 20 years old or something like that. So that's what he does. And then what happens, he has this friend called Dan, and Dan is this guy who was a missionary. He would go to all the little enclaves of people who are living, who aren't part of the Bitchin' Society, and sort of convert them over and say, no, here, let me give you a little bit of my Woofy, and let me work with this adhocracy, and let me try and bring you into the world. You don't have to starve. You don't have to be bad. You can, or just like this, you can come out into this society and do anything. And that's what he did. But the thing is with Dan is that he converted, he was a missionary, and converted some of the last people who weren't part of the Woofy Society, apart from the Bitchum Society, and he has nothing, no goal in life and no aim in life anymore. So what happens is that Dan is saying, well, I'm just going to build up my karma a bit more, because he's sort of karma skin, and once I've built up my karma a bit more, then I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to commit suicide. And, you know, Jules and his girlfriend Lil are like, oh, well, whatever, like that. So, but then what happens is that instead of Dan killing himself, Jules is killed. And so, yeah, he's killed, and then, but he gets a new body, and he doesn't lose very many memories. He only loses like an hour of memories or anything, something like that. And then he's like, why am I being killed? And he works out, oh, I've been killed because I was just killing me. Doesn't really affect me in any way, not too much, because, you know, I've got my memories back. I didn't lose that much time. It's a slight inconvenience to die. But really, it was just a distraction. So then another adhocracy can come in and start taking over some of the rides. And like, they're going to destroy the tradition of the rides and things like that. At one point as well, after he dies and comes back, he's very impulsive. Jules is very impulsive, and he does this thing, and it results, I don't want to give it away, but it results in the implant in his brain, his computer implant in his brain, breaking. And this is quite near the beginning of the novel, maybe about in the first quarter of the novel or something like that. And I thought, now I get what's going on. And I thought I knew where this book was going to go, down and out in the Magic Kingdom. He no longer has his brain implant, and when he goes and checks someone for Woofy, he can't see their Woofy rating. And I thought this was going to be great. So now, all the time, he's been down and out. He's been rich or poor, but being rich or poor in this society is still okay, because you can still get fed, you can still use energy, you can still go anywhere you want, and you can interact with people as well. How other people treat you is relating your Woofy and things like that. But I thought, yeah, this is going to be great. He's no longer got his computer implant. And the way that you really investigate a kind of societal setup, in a way, or a political setup, or an economic setup, is that you break it. Like the unincorporated man, my favorite parts of the unincorporated man is that everyone lives in a society where everyone is incorporated, and there's this one guy who isn't incorporated, and he's the unincorporated man. And by having one person who doesn't fit in with the rest of the system, in the rest of the society, having to live in that society and all of the questions that raises, that is the thing that I find really interesting about science fiction. You set up a new set of rules, but to explore those set of rules, you need to break them in some ways. So I thought, this is great. He's got a broken implant. He can't access Woofy. Nobody can give him Woofy. His entire Woofy thing doesn't work anymore. And that's what we're going to investigate. And that is why it's down and out, is that it's not even that he hasn't got money, or he hasn't got the currency of the day. He doesn't even have access to get any of that currency in any way. Unfortunately, the novel doesn't go in that direction. It just carries on before. And Julian, Julius, doesn't even have any inconvenience of not having Luffy. The only inconvenience he has is that his brain doesn't work properly. I mean, his brain implant doesn't work properly. So he has to use computers and print stuff out on paper and use smartphones and all these other things that he, but he doesn't have them in his implant. But when someone meets him, they're not like, whoa, hang on a second, where's your Luffy score? It's not like your Luffy score is zero or negative. It's just you don't even have a Luffy score. What's going on? Are you a robot? How come, are you a human being? If you don't have any money or possessions, or if you don't have anything like that and you don't have a Luffy score, how can we value you as a human being? But nobody asks that question. And Jules doesn't ask that question. As soon as he gets his implant knocked out, he's just like, right, okay, back. And the rest of the story, it just turns out that it's just lots of problems and politics about the Magic Kingdom. And this is the big problem with the novel, is that I don't really care about the Magic Kingdom. I don't really care about Disneyland or Disney World. I don't even care enough to remember if it's Disneyland or Disney World that it's in. That's how little I care about Disney. I like the movies, but I've never been to the theme park. I'm not a fan. So anytime there's a conflict about, oh, we're going to do this. Oh, we need to do this. Oh, now we're going to do this with the ride. And we're going to do that with the ride. And then these people are going to do this. And these Imagineers are going to do this. And the Disney cast members are going to do this. And the cast member that. And this. And I was just like, I just don't care. I can't. It's not like I don't have anything against Disneyland or World, and I understand why people are fans of it, but that's just not me. And when this central conflict in this novel is about, like, what they're going to do with the Haunted Mansion, and I thought it would be about being down and out and not having access to Luffy, and it's going to be a really good investigation of sort of, like, setting up a system and then breaking the rules. You know, in the iRobot books by Asimov, the reasons why they're so fun and the whole laws of robotics is fun is because in every single story, Asimov says, hey, here are the rules, and now I'm going to break rule number three. Here are the rules, and now I'm going to test rule number one. Here are the rules, and now rule number two is going to be this. Here's the rules, and the rules just don't work at all. We need a zero rule, and we need a fourth rule, and, you know, and that, and every time that you have these things, it's like, actually, these rules aren't good enough. Whereas the Woofery and the Adhocracy and the Bitchin' Society isn't tested in any way. And that's what I found really, really disappointing, because that's what I thought the novel was going to be about. The plotting is actually way tighter than it is in Makers, because, like I say, the first third of Makers is actually a really good, fun, short story. And then the rest of it just meanders here and meanders there. And I say this time and time again, stuff happening is not plot. Thankfully, stuff happens in this novel, but the plot is quite tight as well. It's a short book, it gets over with, it's quite, like, logically consistent, and everything sort of happens. I mean, there are a few plot holes here and there, but as a plot, it's actually pretty good. Pretty tight, let me put it that way. There's not a lot of fluff, it's a short book, and you get through it, but it wasn't really what I was expecting. I really wanted it to be an investigation of Luffy, and not just Luffy, but the society that had been created. And you can, like, let me put it this way, get onto some of the characters here. Let me just finish off a little bit more about the plot here. Before I get the characters. So, one problem that I had is that not only do I not care about the Magic Kingdom, and even in Makers, all the stuff that happens in Disney, I'm like, Disneyland, I'm like, a world, I'm just like, not really caring so much. The worst thing about this novel, or another thing about this novel, is that we get glimpses of loads of really more interesting places and more interesting people and more interesting things to do and more interesting events. Like, for example, Dan works as a missionary to people who are not in the Bitchin' Society. That would have been a really interesting story. Follow Dan. So go and see what Dan does when he goes down to Guatemala or wherever he goes and to this place and that place and follow him around the world. That would be really interesting. Or at one point, we get these flashbacks. And actually, the flashbacks are really interesting because we get to know more about the society through flashbacks than we do in some ways by spending time in the Magic Kingdom. And so Julian goes into space and he writes a symphony in space, and there's this big space bubble with people floating around inside of it and making music. But that's just sort of in a flashback, and then we go back to the Magic Kingdom. And then there's people heading out into the stars, and people are going to Mars, and people are going out, you know, throughout galaxies. People are immortal now. They can back their brains up, store themselves electronically. So they're going down to the stars. I'm thinking, that's amazing. It's just a throwaway mention. And that's why, again, I found the scope of the novel, setting this big world which really isn't investigated in any way, really isn't explored in any way, and it's got such a narrow focus in, like, oh, the Hall of Presidents and the, you know, the Haunted Mansion. I don't know enough about fairground rides to sort of get all the in jokes and all the mentions and stuff like that, but there's lots of these rides mentioned. I'm just thinking, why are we always looking back? I know, I guess it's, like I say, it's what you find valuable in a society where the entire intrinsic... there is no intrinsic value in anything. No, there's only intrinsic value in things. Trying to get this sentence in my head before I get out onto in the podcast here. I don't edit these, by the way, if anyone's listening to this for the first time. No edits here. So the only value that anything ever has is the intrinsic value as people just interact with it. It's not like this is valuable because it costs this much. This is valuable because this is valuable. And you go, well, why is it valuable? Well, it's valuable to me. It's valuable to everyone. And we can measure this by the people who interact with it, the people who pay it time and attention, rather than the people who pay money for it. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing there. So the characters, Julian, he's really too impulsive. And this is what I don't get about Cory Doctorow's characters. It's like, oh, I need something happen. I need something dramatic to happen. So my main character is just going to get angry and do something stupid, and that'll lead to the next part of the plot. Not very satisfying. In this way, I can understand it because the guy's just been murdered. And I'm like, he's like, I want to know who murdered me. Even though you're thinking, well, it doesn't really matter. You've got your memories back. It's sort of like someone mildly inconveniencing you. But it's quite cool. Again, I don't want to give it away, but it's really cool what he does to get revenge, and then what happens, and that and then that does set up the rest of the story. And that's why I was that's when that happened, I thought, oh, this is actually really clever. The interaction between Julian and Dan is Jules and Dan is really going to take a turn, a different turn now. But it doesn't. And that's why I didn't understand, like, why, like, when he's been murdered, he's really impulsive and wants to get back. And then when he finds out the reason for his murder, and he manages to track down the person he's murdered, and he works out the reason why someone's been murdered, then he just goes, oh, and he doesn't care anymore. And I found that really strange, that at one point he really cares, and another point he doesn't really care, and he hasn't. And there didn't seem to be any sort of character journey to get from him really, really caring about something, which was a mild inconvenience, to him not caring about it later on when it's even more of an inconvenience. Anyway, it's a bit strange. Dan, like I say, is his friend who's more interesting, or we're told that he's more interesting, and it seems like in his past he's more interesting. And when we first meet him, right in the first page of the book, he sounds like this old grizzled character who's got a lot of character, and he's like this guy, he's like, and he seems really interesting. And then, like, after that first prologue, and then when he turns up again, he's a little bit more interesting, and then he sort of just hangs around. And his quandary is sort of like, oh, I want to commit suicide, but I want to get more woofy, and then I'll commit suicide. That's quite a cool thing, and he's trying to build himself up for it. So he's almost a more interesting character. But then any time that we spend time with him, he's really boring, and I couldn't work out why, like, at the beginning of the book, he was the more engaging guy. And even Jules, the main character, is like, hey, Dan was the most interesting guy I met. And he did sound interesting, but then when he comes back later, he's not. And so Scott isn't a character in the novel, but a guy, Cherber, Scott, his handle on this forum that I chat on is called Cherber, and he always says, ah, Cory Doctorow, he's always got this screwed over by the girlfriend subplot in every single one of Cory Doctorow's novels. And yep, here it is again. So for seemingly no reason, it seems like the relationship's going okay, and this is going, and then, yep, screwed over by the girlfriend. And I don't really understand why that happened either. It just seems to be, oh, we need drama. And there's this relationship, and the beginning of the relationship, just, we don't really see it very much, but there didn't seem to be much drama there. But we need some drama, so stuff is going to happen, and this character is going to do this for seemingly no reason, or, anyway, it's a bit strange. Like, the characters are just doing things, and I never understood why any of the characters were doing them. And they needed to do them, because for the plot, like I say, it's quite tightly plotted, and they need to do all these things to get through A, B, C, D, E, but they just not very well written. Talking about writing, the writing is okay. It does read a bit like a young adult novel, and that's why I think I like Little Brothers a lot, because that was a book that was pitched for young people, and I think Cory Doctorow is very good at writing for young people in novels. You know, there's lots of new funny new words that he brings in there, and again, it's just stuff is explained quite, you know, it's quite literally, you know, things are just said this happens, you're like, okay, that's good. There's not too many layers to the text. It seems like it. So for a kid's book, a young adult novel, that works well. And also, Cory Doctorow is very good at communicating technology. That's what he does. He's a blogger and he's a digital rights activist or electronic Electronic Frontiers Foundation guy. His job is to communicate technology and security and digital rights management and the goods and bads of it. And Little Brother is pretty much like a series of lessons, a series of essays, a series of case studies, a series of examples of that, and it works really well. Here, he doesn't really do that. He's like, I know this is quite an old novel for him, back in 2003, probably wrote it 2002. It's just, you know, things are just not really explained very well. It's just sort of like stated rather than explained well in, like, as he does in Little Brother. So the writing, okay, not very good. So finally, I talk about science. In this book, the science is very, normally I talk about the science and technology, but there's not really much to talk about here. It's sort of like post-scarcity. Anyone can do anything. If we need a robot, we can have a robot. If we need this technology, we can do this kind of stuff. So there's not really much to say there. But to bring it back to sort of like to tie this in with the thematic kind of stuff, I have a big problem with Woofy. Woofy was one of my favourite things about the book, but then because it wasn't explored, it was one of my least favourite things about the book. Like, it's such a great idea that everybody, when they meet, it's all done by reputation, and we can quantify reputation in a way that when you meet someone, you know how to treat them. If you've got some scarce resource, which is actually scarce in the scarce post-scarcity world, we know how to, if you want to run a theme park and it's a very historic and very important, historically important and traditional theme park, who gets the say? Well, it's the people with the highest Woofy count are the ones who get to have the say. And because if you don't have, single person can't do this, you get together, you get a group of people together in, like I say, this ad hocracy, and together they can combine their Woofy, and people say, yes, these guys are the guys that we want, guys and girls that we want to be able to run this thing. We're going to trust them because a lot of people have respected their decisions in the past, and now they can take part and do that in the future as well. Great idea. But when you're coming up with new currency, you always have to think, where does it come from? How does it come from? Something has to be scarce at the beginning. And there was this thing that came out a few months ago, was it Bitcoin or something like that? And you have to use computer cycles to mine coins, and then that'll be a currency. And of course, it was a big scam, or it might as well have been a big scam. You just look at it and go, well, that's not going to work. And of course, after a few weeks, I think it only took a few weeks for that technology to launch, go somewhere. Some people might have made some money, I'm not sure, and then it all just fell apart. It's not backed by government or anything. Now, there is a new kind of currency which came out, which is the sort of carbon, the carbon trading kind of thing. And so that everyone gets a cap on how much carbon, and after that they have to trade for the carbon. They can't just pollute here and stuff. So what happened with this is that the government said to all of these, I'm just going in the UK, what happened is that they said, okay, all of you companies which make electronics, you're all going to get electricity. So how much electricity output that you have, you're going to get given so many credits. But if you need more, you've got to buy them. And if you have credits and you don't need them because you're not using as much carbon, you can sell them. So what happened was that the nuclear, no carbon used there at all, they were given the same amount as the people who had used coal for their power stations. So then the power stations were like, well, we need more, so then we're going to have to buy them from here. But they didn't buy them directly from the government. The government allotted them for free, and then if they needed more, they had to buy them from each other, rather than the government saying, you have to buy them directly from us at a knockdown rate and stuff like that. But so they really sort of, in my opinion, the way that I looked at it, it seemed like they messed up there, because they didn't really think about the value of something at its inception. When they start off, it's like, okay, we can't, if we give out free credits at the beginning, what we're really doing is just saying, okay, you nuclear power people, you can now sell these to the people who need them for their coal and gas, and you get the money, but they could have got that money. It was just a strange thing that you've got to have some value and some scarcity for something at the beginning. And it was never explained where that scarcity at the beginning of the currency of Woofie came from. Did everyone in the world have one Woofie point? Could people buy Woofie points back when there was money? Did they get Woofie for doing there? You know, that kind of stuff. It's like, where did the Woofie come from? Or is it just like on YouTube, if you like a video, you give an upvote and you give it a downvote? But then it's not a currency. It's just an indicator. And then if someone gives you a downvote, like, where is the new supply of Woofie coming from? Is it just like if you meet someone and they give you, if they just go, oh, I like this guy, do you just get one extra Woofie? Does it just come from nowhere? Well, if then you could just have like a Woofie farm that you could just get lots of people meeting each other and having a good time and respecting each other, and you could just continuously do that. Or does, if Woofie goes from you to somebody else, do you decrease one Woofie point when you give one extra Woofie to somebody else? Is that the way it goes from? Because some people they lose their Woofie, and I was like wondering, well, how do they lose their Woofie? Is it a downvote? Is downvoting people is bringing it down? Do people, like, can you inherit Woofie? What happens if you die? Some people do die in this thing. It's like, if you go into storage, do you just keep the same Woofie? Or does over time your Woofie decrease? Is there Woofie inflation? Is 10 Woofie today worth what 100 Woofie is going to be worth in 10 years? Because if so, if you go into cold sleep, if you deadhead for a century and you come out, are you going to have to start again at the baseline of Woofie again? Does it tick down automatically over time? That would be one way to do it. So you have to keep doing cool stuff, because if you just sit around, maybe your Woofie points go down at 1 point per day. You know, what happens if you accidentally put yourself into two bodies? Does that mean you can get twice as much Woofie? I mean, that's not explored in this thing as well. And is there only one Woofie number? Is it just one number for Woofie? It's like, I have Woofie 78 today, and tomorrow I'll have 79, and the next day I'll have 54, you know, just depending on what it goes up. But do I, if I get Woofie because my girlfriend thinks I'm awesome in bed, does that make my Woofie increase? But then if I do a bad job at work, or if I do something that's stupid, and they take Woofie away from me or downvote my Woofie, is that on the same scale? Can I have, like, girlfriend great in bed Woofie scale, and at the same time I can have, like, is awesome at juggling, and that can be Woofie, and is really bad at drinking, and is bad at conversation, and that Woofie can go down, and is bad at working, you know, and that Woofie can go down too. So it's like, maybe, yeah, sort of like, I saw this very funny thing the other day, and it was election candidates in America, presidential election candidates in America, Dungeons and Dragons character sheets, and they'd sort of numerated what they were. You know, this person does this, and this is their special ability, and they've got this height, and this is their charisma, and this is their fortitude, or I can't even remember all the different things that you have on your character sheet there. Maybe it's something like that. Is Woofie, can we have a different thing? Because I have different bank accounts. You know, I have a credit card account is one kind of thing. I have I guess my bank account. I've got my business bank account. I've got a PayPal account, and that's normally got maybe, you know, a few dollars in there as well. I've got, you know, all these different things, and I use these different money. I mean, it's all money, and I can transfer one from the other. So maybe that's what I can do. Maybe if I'm awesome in bed, but I'm shit at my work, maybe I can go, oh, well, I'll just move all my Woofie across. Can you have that? So the whole control of Woofie and all of those different kind of things, it did seem to be, it's there. The idea of Woofie is there, and I like it, but I really wanted to know how it worked, and that we never found out about Woofie. And I thought we did, because lots of people talk about Woofie. When I, you know, I've mentioned different things, people will send me an email. It's like, oh, that's like Woofie, or you'll like this book because it's got Woofie in it, and this is a Woofie kind of thing. And it seems to have caught on. The idea of Woofie has caught on. And maybe because it's so vague, maybe because Woofie could be anything. Maybe it could just be upvoting and downvoting like you do on a YouTube video. But then even on YouTube video, we can see how many people like it and how many people dislike it. It's not just a one Woofy rating, it's a plus Woofy rating compared to a minus Woofy rating on YouTube, that is. And up votes and down votes. And on Facebook, we can see how many people liked something. We can see how many people commented on it. We can see how many people reshared it. There's like three or four different things that you can do on Twitter as well. You can reshare or you can retweet. You can favorite. You can, I know, reply and stuff like that. And as social media and as the idea of Woofy, of living by reputation, is sort of like becoming more real, living, you know, as people come in and, you know, sort of like have the, can almost quantify their social media value in a way by followers and following and tweeting and retweeting and sharing and liking and all the upvoting and downvoting. All of that is existing, and it's more complicated. But I think because Woofy is so vague, you can just say Woofy. You have good Woofy. It's sort of like you having good Woofy is more of a, it's not a quantifiable thing in the real world. It's just sort of like a, I have good status, I have good standing, which can be in some way rated and quantified, and you can give me, without giving me money, but just by giving me a little bit of respect, you can increase or decrease my Woofy in a sort of technological way. Yeah, so that's the kind of thing. That's the kind of thing that I found interesting about the book, but then really frustrating that we didn't get that kind of thing. Like I say, Jules in the book, he loses his brain technology, and I think that is great. Not only is he going to do that, but he can't back himself up anymore. In fact, that is explored a bit more. You know, if he can't back himself up, and if he dies, he's going to lose all of the memories of everything that he's going through at the moment. But for him, it seems like almost an inconvenience. But you know, that's the kind of thing. But I really wanted that exploration of Woofy too. Another thing about this book is about value. This is a book about what is valuable to people. And of course, tradition is valuable, and reputation is valuable, and human life is valuable, or is it not valuable? And so also we do have quite a look about, you know, not a look, what should I say? What is valuable morality-wise? Mortality, not valuable. Morality, more valuable. So, like, when someone does something to Jules and when Jules does something to someone else, it's like, okay, you've done this bad thing to me, but it doesn't really matter because, like, if you're going to steal something from me, okay, that's okay because I can just get something else. I got high Woofy. If you steal something from me, your Woofy goes down, my Woofy goes up with sympathy Woofy. That's mentioned and not really explained how that works. But yeah, there's this weird thing. But like, okay, so if you kill me, but I can be, you know, I can be resheathed from a backup, which is an altered carbon. Resheathing is an altered carbon word. But yeah, you can sort of force grow your clone and get back into the thing, and the doctor can put you back in, and everything's fine. Yeah, so that's what this. I can't really explain what this book is saying about this or what I think about this. But the whole idea that if you're immortal, morality changes, like, oh, well, you've lost your girlfriend, well, it doesn't matter. And so it's strange that this character, like I say, I didn't understand why characters are doing something. If I'm going to be really kind to this novel, the reason why I don't understand why characters would act impulsively here and then not mind here and then be really angry that they've been killed, but then when they meet their killer or they find out why they've been killed, it's just like, oh, well, yeah, I guess you're doing a good job. Yeah, so all they really cared about is if it affects their Woofy or not, rather than if it really affects the lives of other people. Maybe. Again, I don't know. Is morality based on mortality? Is morality based on scarcity? And in a way it is. Like, the only reason why stealing is bad is because if you take something away from somebody else, they don't have it anymore. And that's the problem with, you know, DRM and trying to stop people copying something. If you copy something from someone, it's not like they don't have it anymore. They've still got 100% of what you've copied, but you also have 100% of it. And that's what I don't understand about why people like Cory Doctorow are always talking about privacy and Facebook is stealing your data. Facebook doesn't steal your data. When Facebook uses data that you give to it, you still have 100% of the data that you've given to Facebook. They're probably better at organizing it than you are, which is why you give it to them, to let them organize it for you. But like, when someone steals your private information, they're not stealing anything, they're just copying it. You still have 100% of the information that you've given them, or let them take, or that they've stolen. But they also have 100% of the information that you've given them, or that they've stolen, or that you've let them take, and things like that. So that, what is the morality of privacy, and what is the morality of data, and what is the morality of not data, of real objects, when real objects are as easy to reproduce as data is, and as easy to copy as data is. Up to the point of, if your life is as easy to copy and as easy to reset, like, if all you need to do to skip someone, to skip any wrongdoing that has been done to you, is to just back up and forget about the wrong thing that they've done to you. And if the only, and if the way that, if you've done something wrong to somebody else, you can just go back and forget that you've done something wrong to somebody else. If morality is as easy to manipulate as data, maybe people will do stuff for stupid reasons, knowing that they can just reset it. For example, we learn of this story with Jules, and he gets his girlfriend, and his girlfriend had such a bad time with him. Not going to go into the reasons. But when they split up, she just reset her memory for 2 years previously, and just didn't have any memory of Jules anymore. And that hurt him, but he was like, no, I'm going to take that hurt, and I'm going to just use it, and I'm not going to cut that hurt out of my life. I'm going to, you know, in the same way that Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is this kind of thing. It's like, okay, if you do something bad to somebody and then they wipe their brain, they wipe their record of it, does that matter? Did they still do something bad to you? And if you did something bad to someone and then you forget about it, did you really do something bad? So the whole kind of morality versus mortality versus crime, in the same way that, like, stealing data isn't stealing, it's copying, in the same way that hurting somebody who is immortal or can be immortal isn't really immoral because they can just, you know, back up, or they can just do kind of stuff like that. So that those questions are asked in this book. Maybe, like I say, if I'm being kind, maybe that explains the reasons why people are doing something and the reasons why people act so stupidly. But in some ways, I think I might be just being a little bit too kind about this novel, because it's not really explicitly stated that this is what this is about. In the same way that, well, it doesn't need to be explicitly stated. I like picking out these themes of novels, but in a way, it's like... Everyone says that this novel is about Woofy, and this novel is about the adhocracy and the Bitchin' society, whereas what I think it's more about is, you know, values and morality. Maybe. But am I the only person who is picking this up? It's not, this book is not about Woofy, because it doesn't answer any of these questions, but it does raise more questions about morality in a digital society where people are a copyable. I've explained it. I don't need to go into more about it. So that's what I find about this book. I am going to give this book 1.5 stars, because I think it is not very good. No, let me give it 2 stars. I think 1.5 stars is a bit too low, because, like I say, it did make me think about different stuff, but it made me think about these things in a really frustrating way. It's like this author has mistakenly made a better story in my brain than he has given me. Like I say, when I was 20% of the way through the book, I thought it was going in a different direction. And when I played out that direction in my brain, I was thinking, oh, this is great. I know where it's going to go. And it's going to be great, because he's going to think of things that I haven't thought of. Cory Doctorow is going to tell me things about Woofy, and he's going to tell me things about value, and he's going to tell me things about tradition, and he's going to tell me things about morality and mortality, things that I don't know. And I'm really looking forward to seeing all of that kind of stuff. And then it just devolved into a book about a subject which I don't care what the Hall of Presidents in the Magic Kingdom is going to say. I don't care about the haunted house, the haunted mansion. Just doesn't interest me at all. And that's what he goes on to. So the novel that was playing out in my head, which was all the stuff that he missed, which he might have been putting in between the lines. Well, it's not even between the lines. It's between the chapters. It's between the characters. It's between the dialogue, which wasn't said, which I was imagining would be better in my brain. The questions that he rose in my brain that I could answer or investigate in my brain were much more interesting than the novel that I actually read. So yeah, let's give it 1.5 stars for one of the most disappointing books. It's not a disappointing book. It's so short that the reason I managed to get through it and it wasn't too bad was that it was so short that I managed to read it in just a few hours. It didn't waste any time. And that's a good thing about a novel. If it's not going to be good, at least be short. So, yeah, it was short and it wasn't very good. I'll give it 2 stars. So that's it for this review. Oh, well, let me actually go across to goodreads.com. I got this page here open already. Let me see. I gave it 2 stars. 3.58 stars is the Goodreads average. And Friends review, 22 friends have given it 3.22 stars on average here. Alexander gave it 4 stars. Le Keshua gave it 4 stars. Joel rated it 2 stars, which is more my thing. He's got a long review there. I'm not going to read it. Arian rated it 3 stars. I enjoyed Doctor Who, but this was a little slow and not quite as polishedly snarky as his following books. I would really recommend instead his YA novels, Little Brother and For the Win, which really shine. Yeah, maybe I'll read For the Win sometime. Aaron, 3 stars. Other people give it stuff. So it was a good thing. Seems like some people are in agreement with me that it's not so good. But generally, 3-star book. I give it 2 stars. So you can follow me on goodreads.com or become my friend or whatever you do there. Go to goodreads.com, I think just / Luke Burridge. And I too, when I read a book, I can see what you think about it, which I really enjoy doing this. And I do see the stream of people's reviews come through. I do read other people's reviews and I do enjoy that. Oh, and also on the goodreads.com page, there's a link where you can download the ebook for this as well. In the show notes, there will be a link directly to my review of this book. And also on my website, On the sfbrp.com. If you go to sfbrp.com/episode-lists or something, there's a link right there on the front page as well. You can see a list of every single novel that I've reviewed so far on this podcast, or most of them anyway. All the episodes, all the individual episodes are listed there. Also, every book that I've reviewed so far is listed by star rating. So if you wanted to just listen to my reviews of the books I loved or just the books I hated, you can listen there. You can just see them there too. And also by author. So if you're wondering, have you read a book by this author? Yeah, you can just find it there. Everything is listed by episode number, by star rating, and by author. It's very easy to check that out as well. And generally, and every one of them has got links to the blog post, the Wikipedia page, goodreads.com reviews, everything's there on this one big page, one nerdy science fiction page. That's it from me. Email me, luke@juggler.net. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge there. Check out my blog. I mentioned that at the beginning, lukeburridge.com/blog. You can even read my own novels and a new one, which will be coming out in a few weeks' time when I finish it, called Get That Rat Off My Face. Or something. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.